Today we're going to go way, way back in the beginning of time and see where evil began, see where pride began, but we're seeing how it's actually come to our present time and in our present world. Last week, Allie had her bathroom up on stage, which I doubt it was her actual bathroom. I mean, you know, she had her bathroom. I doubt she ever did anything in that toilet. I think it was a reproduction, but she had her bathroom on stage. As she said, I did enjoy when she actually sat in the toilet, but if she had the seat up, it would have taken it one step further. But she talked about how the roots of pride were evident in a moment in her bathroom one day. Brian Wells spoke about how his pride was seen while he was in a cubicle. And my pride is seen sometimes when I'm here at the table. Last week we talked about the head of the table can sometimes be a position of pride, or people can be sucking up to people at the head of table. Well, this is where I sit when I'm at my house. This is my dining room table that we've had for about 18 years now. And I sit here, and Libby sits here, and Jake sits here, Lena sits here, and Mariah sits here on most days. And though I've never said, I drive a Dodge Stratus, though I've never said that, I might have said, I drive a Chevy Blazer. I am a senior pastor, a very important job, though I've never actually said that, and that a stark of a term, I can't help but admit that some of the things that I bring with me expects certain behavior, certain treatment. And certainly, kids shouldn't dishonor their dad. But sometimes I get a little more offended than I should because of my pride. Because I expect a certain type of treatment. In fact, as I've noticed, all the tensions that I've had in my family relationships, it all comes down to difficulties with pride. And in fact, when I notice how I judge other people, it mostly comes down to pride. I remember when my kids were really young, I would hear about how families rarely have family dinners, and we would have a family dinner every single night. And I'd be thinking, how can you not have a family dinner? Well, now that my two oldest are 17 and 15, they got activities happening all the time. It's not all that often. We actually gather around this table, yet my pride allowed me to stand in a high and mighty position and judge other families that didn't have family dinner as off as we did. All the tensions that we have relationally, I believe, comes down to pride. In fact, every marital tension that you may be having, I guarantee, comes down to somebody having pride. Every friendship tension, every divorce that's ever happened, the root of that is nothing other than pride. Someone lifting themselves up, feeling like they're higher than the other person, feeling like their opinions are more valued than the other person, feeling like their worth is higher, feeling like their contribution to the relationship is higher, instead of saying, no, I'm going to come underneath you and support you. We don't like it when somebody is higher than us. We don't like it when we are led. Our pride wants us to be in the head. Our pride wants us to have our ideas that are taken. You know, I'm going to look at the story in the Bible that's referred to a lot. It's actually a very foundational story of the rest of the Bible and the very foundational story for our lives today. It's the story of Adam and Eve. We're going to take a look at one little slice in the midst of that. One of the reasons why many of us in here have a problem with the Bible or a problem with God is we look at the story of Adam and Eve and how they were tempted and eventually fell, and we blame God and we say, God, how is it that you could create a world where they would do that? It's almost like you set them up to fail, God. And I know we have so many different spiritual orientations in here, people who believe different things about God, people are walking different things with God, but all of us might remember that sort of angst that we had when we first explored this story, where God said, don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's the one thing. And we said, well, why would God say that one thing? And then we thought to ourselves, well, he must have known that they were going to do the wrong thing. So why would he set them up for failure? It doesn't make sense. I'll tell you what is even more confusing. Not only did God set up an environment where it was possible for them to fail, this was the second time. This was the second time. See, what God is most interested in with you and I, he's interested in a relationship. That's the most important thing to him. And for there to be a relationship, there has to be freedom. For there to be freedom, there has to be choice. There has to be the option to choose different things. If there's no relationship, if there's no freedom, if there's no choice, then what we're basically into is we're computer software to God, where he pre-programs us and we have to do the right thing. That's not a relationship. Maybe nothing will go wrong in our life, but there's no relationship. There's no love. Love is dependent on the presence of freedom. And where there's freedom, there's always the freedom to choose poorly. This is the way God operates in relationships. And when he goes and sets the situation up with Adam and Eve, this is the second time. The very first relationship that really went bad with God is the relationship with his right-hand created being, his right-hand angel. And the Bible called such things as the angel of light, also called Lucifer, also called Satan, also called the devil. Now, I'm going to talk about some things today. They're going to seem like they're way, way out to you. And you may not believe everything that I'm going to say to you, but these are the themes that go throughout the Bible. And I like you to just sit there and go, you know, that at least makes sense in how it's playing out in my life today. I think that's what you're going to find. God had created the right-hand person to oversee all of the heavens. And Lucifer was not happy that God was up here. Lucifer did not want to be led. He didn't like that there was one more position, one more notch up that he could go to. And so the Bible teaches that he started gathering his friends that he was managing, other angels. And he led a revolt in heaven. He led a civil war. And one third of all angels ended up going against God because they thought there was a higher place. They abused their freedom. They abused their choice, trying to lift themselves up. And God said, I'll have none of that. And he thwacked them and sent them hurtling down to earth. These angels are what is referred to today as demons. You might have heard of demons. Demons are nothing more than fallen angels. Angels that were once serving God and all of a sudden decided to serve themselves. In the book of Ezekiel, here's what God says. He says, your heart became proud, speaking to Lucifer, your heart became proud on account of your beauty. See, the reason why we get prideful is because there is something that's really good about us. There is something. There's some competency. There's some ability that we have. And so the beauty, the majesty, the sense of majesty that Lucifer had caused him to be proud. On account of your beauty, you corrupted your wisdom because of your splendor. Start thinking bad thoughts. Very, very smart people do very, very stupid things when pride gets a hold of us. So I threw you to the earth. I made a spectacle of you before kings. So the very first relationship that ever happened was not between Adam and Eve. It was between God and Lucifer. And it went bad because somebody abused their freedom because they wanted to lift themselves to the spot of God. They didn't want to be led. So now fast forward however long it took. And we have the story of Adam and Eve. And here they start to interact. And God says, you have freedom. There's one thing I don't want you to do. I don't want you to eat of the tree. And there's a whole kinds of reasons of why that was, what's in there. I can't go a total deep dive into this today. But as they're enjoying their life, as they're naked, as they're interacting with each other, Satan takes on the form of a serpent and comes and starts talking with Eve and starts saying to her, hey, you know, God's really holding out on you. I mean, you certainly don't want to take instructions from him, do you? I mean, you really are a pretty hot chick. You really have some very smart insights. You know, God is just afraid what's going to happen if you take of that fruit. And actually, here's what it says in the book of Genesis, chapter 3. It says, you will not certainly die, the serpent said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be open and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. God's holding out on you. God's holding out on you. He really, really is not about your best interests. In fact, there's some conspiracy going on here, Eve, that you're being thwarted, that you're being pushed down. That's what pride does to us. This is what pride does. It makes us think that there's more if we strive for more. It makes us think that somebody's holding out on us. Even makes us think that God is holding out on us. And there's no reason why this rule should be in place. And so Eve is being considering this whole thing. She's being tempted. And when we're being tempted, there's nothing wrong with being tempted unless we actually follow through on the whole thing. But Eve is being tempted. Her pride is starting to swell up inside of her, wondering whether or not God is holding out on her, whether or not he's holding her down, whether or not she needs to be going up to the next level. So she decides, to take of the tree and eat. She eats it. Then she passes it to, she finds her man, Adam, and he ends up succumbing to temptation as well. He eats, and immediately their eyes are open, it says, and they notice that they're naked, and they go and they kind of do fig leaves. Partly they do fig leaves because they don't want to get judged by one another, and part they do fig leaves because their pride makes them see that they're not all that physically. Maybe their pride's like, ooh. Yeah, maybe I'm not all that. So their pride caused them to kind of cover themselves up. They're covering themselves. Because, you know, when we are prideful, what always comes along with that is judging other people. Always. When we're prideful, when we're trying to lift ourselves up, one of the ways that we lift ourselves up is by pushing other people down. We just notice other people might not have as good of a date as we have. We lift ourselves up. We notice other people might not have as good of a marriage as we have. We lift ourselves up. We notice people may as well not have as good of a workout ethic. We lift ourselves up and push them down. We judge each other, other people, because of their choices that they make, or their spending decisions, or their saving decisions. I mean, we have our own little categories where we exalt ourselves up by judging other people. And the leaves that they had helped them overcome the judgments and the pride that they were feeling from the other person. So as they're living like this for a bit, God comes down. He's walking through the garden, and it's a really dramatic scene here. And God comes up to him and he says this. He says, "Have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from?" Of course, he knows the answer to this. He knows the answer. He's trying to see if they want to come clean. And when you're prideful, you tend to not come clean. Deny, deny, deny. You just deny. You're hoping no one's going to find out. They're even thinking, God, there's no way does God know. They're trying to deny. And the man said, "Well, the woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree and I ate it." A few things we're going to notice about pride today. Number one, pride produces bitterness. Pride produces bitterness. I know this in my life, any time that I'm bitter, it's because pride fuels me to be bitter. You know, a number of years ago, and I got a salary cut, not here, previous place I served, my pride caused me to be bitter about that. You know, someone dumps you, your pride causes you to be bitter about that. Because you say, I am up here, they're down here. Who do they think they are to hurt me? Pride hurts us. It's the original sin way back to Lucifer. And that was where the trunk was, and the tree, the limbs, the roots come all the way here today, and it actually hurts us. I'm getting ready to go on my summer study break, and my pride hurts me when I think about my summer study break. My pride doesn't want me to take an extended time off every year. It really doesn't, because my pride wants everybody to see me as up here as it relates to work ethic. My pride wants me to be viewed as the guy who works 6 days a week, 70 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, and I take pride in my work ethic. I don't work 70 hours a week. It's rare that I do any longer. But my pride, in fact, it's even hard for me to say that right now, because my pride makes me go, "Oh yeah, I want you to think I work that much." My pride makes me want you to judge me as high and exalted in my work ethic. And if I'm not careful, my pride will cause me to work longer, not because I'm more productive, but because I want people to see me and know that I work hard. See, some of you are going, "Man, I'd like to take extended time off." You can. You can. You can organize your life to do that. Your pride just might not allow you to. You could take a job that has more flexibility, that allows you to do that. It might make less money. I know a lot of you work for organizations where you can actually buy time off, but you never do. Why? Because your pride won't allow you to be judged by somebody else who sees that you're not there when you should be there or when you could be there. Pride hurts us. It always does. We're always the one that loses. We're the ones that are driven into the ground. And initially, emotionally, we feel superior, but physically, we start being driven down, down, down. And we don't even see it. Pride blinds us. Pride blinds us. The evil one is trying to blind Eve and says, "You know what? For God knows." Look at this little line here. "God knows that, you know, when you eat of this, you're going to be better." God knows. He's putting the blinding influencer on this, trying to give her lies to make her believe things about God that are just absolutely not true. And we're in pride land. We can't see things. I mean, come on. What is Eve supposed to think here? Eve has been created by God. Eve has been given an incredible garden to operate in. She's been given an incredible relationship, an incredible man, incredible fruit. She's never been sick a single day in her life. And yet she's blinded and thinking that God is holding out on her. I loved Allie last week. Which, by the way, how good was Allie last week? Was that awesome? It was great. I sat right up in here at the 10 o'clock service. And man, I'll tell you what, I felt so great that I cannot be here and it doesn't matter. I love that. I was up there like, this is so good. Man, I need to just come and sit here every single week. This is good, right? And my pride has come a long way over the last 25 years when I started a ministry. When I started a ministry, if I had somebody pinch hit for me or fill in for me or team teach with me 25 years ago or 20 years ago, I didn't like when people did a good job. I wanted people to go, oh boy, we need you. Nobody is like you. You know, you're just, pride makes you feel these deluded, stupid things and ends up hurting you. Well, Allie was just so phenomenal. And one of the things that she said last week, what I thought was interesting, when she talked about wanting an older woman to spiritually build into her, she said she was blinded by seeing that her mother-in-law was that person. You know, she said, my mother-in-law, she thought, my mother, that's, I need someone like Mother Teresa or somebody like that to come back from the dead because I'm that good. She was thinking those kind of things. But she was blinded by seeing the incredible spiritual qualities and physical qualities of her mother-in-law. Pride blinded. There are incredible things in your life that you can't see because of your pride. There are dangerous things that lurk right around the corner that you can't see because of your pride. And I mentioned 25 years ago, I realized that it was 27 years ago that I came to know who Jesus was. And it came about through a lie, actually. Someone asked me if I wanted to go to a camp to play football for the weekend. I said, yeah, sounds great. And it was the old switcheroo, the bait and switch. I went there, I played about an hour of football, and then they crammed the Bible down my throat for the entire weekend. It was actually a little deceptive, a little deceiving, but it worked, really. It did work, because the football is fun, but it was the very first time that I'd ever heard the story of the Bible in a language in which I could understand. I heard the whole thing. Here's the whole story of the Bible in Cliff Notes version. The world is perfect. People are perfect. God is having a beautiful relationship. People rebel. We sin. There's walls that come up between us and God, up in each other. And through the rest of the Old Testament portion of the Bible, we see how this is playing out. Then Jesus comes down, fully God, fully man. He's tempted in every single way, but he doesn't follow through on any of those temptations. He goes to a cross and he takes the justice for all the rebelliousness that I and everybody else has done. He spreads out his arms. He takes the justice for it. And now what I need to do is to make him my sacrifice. I need to receive him into my life, and I encounter a new kind of spiritual freedom. I heard that in a way in which I never understood before, and it was in camp. I love camps. I came to know Jesus in a camp at 15 years old. I was so caught up into it that I decided to do that for the rest of my life. I said, I'm going to go into student ministry and take kids to camp regularly. So I took kids to camp. I used to speak at camps. I actually started a camp with some friends of mine. Camps were a huge, huge part of my early walk with Christ and my early vocation. And it had been a long time that I had been at a camp until last week. Last week I was at a father-son camp in this classic camp setting. In beautiful, beautiful setting. There's all the stuff that was in part of camps that I remember. There's a lot of laughter. There's some games and competition. There's some rigorous activity. There's big meetings where people are speaking and there's music. And there's another thing that was there that I had forgotten about. And that is oftentimes these camps, the lifeblood or the work ethic is provided by college kids. Oftentimes college kids who, when they were younger, were touched at that very camp. And so now they give back by, during the summers, coming and giving of their time for free. And I noticed these kids immediately when I went to this camp. And I also knew when I went to this camp that I needed to do a little damage control, because at these camps, people who are pastors tend to be treated like royalty, and it's pretty actually disgusting. I don't like it at all. So I made a statement. I wasn't going to let anybody know that I was a pastor. In fact, there was one guy at that camp who knew that I was. I said, dude, you have to promise me, don't tell anybody what I do for a living. Can't do that. Okay, I promise. Good. So I was kind of trying to manage the pride, manage what might happen with that. And yet the pride still came. The pride was still there. I found myself judging these kids for most of the camp. They were all so happy and joyful, and everything was good. God's so good. Yes, I love the Lord. Yeah, everything is good, and everything is happy, and all that stuff. And they had nice, simple answers for everything, and all their lives were together, and they were always happy. And then we would go rafting, and they would pray every 5 minutes on the raft. God, thank you for this rapid, and I pray that I love this creation, and thank you for the raft that doesn't have a hole. Okay, whatever, nice prayer. And then they say the exact same prayer 5 minutes later. I'm like, dude, enough with the stupid prayers. Enough. I find myself thinking this way. And while I'm thinking this way, I'm also thinking, this is really not a healthy sign that I'm thinking this about these people. Because I'm thinking this to myself. I'm thinking, man, you think that life is so simple for you right now. You think that God is so clear. Let's see what happens when you have some adulteries and some cancer come your way. Not that I've ever had adultery and cancer. I don't plan on having either one. Who knows, though? Not that I ever plan on that. But I've been around enough to see that your faith takes on a new depth and a new challenge when that happens. When there's intellectual conundrums that come your way that you haven't even thought of when you're 20 years old. Like I thought, you know, maybe I'll give these people some humility right now. Maybe I'll show them some verses in the Bible that will really rock their faith. Because, you know, you think that you know some of the conundrums? No, I know all of them. I will rock your world right now. I'm thinking maybe I'll do that. I'm thinking there's all kinds of things that can help these kids just get rooted because they're just a little annoying to me. See, what I used to think of when I was their age, the world seemed to be pretty simple to me. And my faith seemed to be simple except for one thing. I could not deal with this lust and masturbation issue. I thought to myself, man, once I kick that, it's going to be so easy following God. Because this thing is always on me, this temptation. And I used to think that, man, once I get over that, everything will be perfect. Following God will be easy. Well, what do you know? You get older, your hormones slow down. You get that thing in control a bit. But you know what? Your life gets harder. I would have never anticipated this at 17, 22 years old. The longer I walk with God, the harder it is. The longer I walk with God, the more the temptations are. The longer I walk with God, the deeper the conundrums are. The longer I walk with God, the more options I have to get away from Him that I didn't have when I was 17 and 22. The longer I walk with God, the harder it is. I didn't know that back then. Now I do. So it causes me to start judging and having pride. As I'm realizing this, when it clicked with me was we're in this cabin time. That's what's called cabin time at night. And the guys would kind of gather around. The dads would be in one spot and the sons would be in another spot. And I said something and this guy said to me, man, you're really cynical. I'm not sure if I'm cynical. Pride and cynicism are very close. I think that pride comes from accomplishments. Cynicism comes from pain. They manifest themselves very, very similarly. You're really cynical. And I was like, busted. And I felt like I had to explain myself. So I said, well, you know, here's part of the reason. I'm a pastor. And they went, you are not. I said, no, I really am. Get out of here. Oh, that's a good one, pastor. Yeah, you're real. I'm like, what? What? You are not a pastor. Shut up. What do you do? What are you, a mechanic? What are you doing? I'm like, so finally I had the one guy who was there. I said, tell them. Yeah, he really is. Actually, he really is. So I ended up talking to him. And what actually I started doing the very first night on is I would go up at the end of the big meetings and they would have all these college kids up in the front and they said, if you want to be prayed for, just come up. And I would go up and I would just say I'd pick one out, a different one every night and say, I need you to pray for me. And they'd say, for what? I said, whatever you want, just pray. And they'd pray. And well, the reason I did that is because I recognized that my pride was separating me from joy. I wanted some of the simple faith concepts that I had 20 years ago that served me well. And I want what those kids have in their life, in my life. So I just said, just pray for me. Just pray for me. I remember one of the songs at camp that I sang all the time, and I never even knew it was in the Bible, from James chapter 4, verse 10. It was rooted in me. It goes like this. Humble thyself in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Yes. Sorry for that singing right there. But that was the, it was almost like a funeral dirge, but that verse is so true. What it says is, be led by God. Lower yourself under God. Embrace that you are lower. Embrace that you are down, down. And when God sees that, that's the person that God actually lifts up. You can climb. You can try to push people down, pride people down, judge people down, climb over people, try to get yourself up all by your might. Or you could take the path of humility and you can bring yourself down, slot yourself down on God. And God says, now that's a person. That's a person who wants to be led. I am going to lift that person to heights to which he or she cannot imagine. But when we're in pride, we don't embrace this. We don't see this is the way that spiritual reality does. Actually, what pride does, the third thing, pride actually belittles. Pride belittles. It causes us to belittle other people. Did you notice what happened when God asked Adam? He said, Hey, Adam, What's the deal with, why you're wearing the fig leaves? Why'd you eat the fruit? Adam says this. He says, well, the woman that you put here with me. Well, God, actually, now we've got to get into this. It's actually your fault. The woman that you put here with me. Because if I was by myself, I wasn't around this dame, everything would, that's an old word, dame. If I wasn't around this woman, everything would be fine. So God, really, the reason why I've done this is because of you. It is your fault, God. He is belittling God. The audacity that he in and of his own free choice has abused his freedom, but he can't even see that. He is belittling God. This is what pride does. Pride causes us to not even notice what is wrong with our lives. Instead, to point the finger and belittle other people. And Eve, on the other hand, similar thing with her. God decides to play along with it a little bit. He says, oh, really? Really, Uncle? Well, I'll go get Eve's version of the story. So it goes over to Eve and says, Eve, what happened here? What's going on here? And Eve says this. Did you notice this? She says, well, the serpent deceived me. Wasn't my fault. Wasn't my fault. The serpent deceived me. And hint, hint, nudge, nudge. God, there'd be no serpent unless you created the serpent, put the serpent here. Because, you know, I didn't do that. The serpent deceived me. Pride blames. Pride produces bitterness. Pride blinds, pride belittles, pride blames. We blame all of the problems of our life on somebody else, on something else that's actually gone wrong. Now, the beautiful thing about the whole story of the Bible, the whole story of what's called the gospel, the good news, the story of Jesus, is that Jesus lives the entire life cycle that Adam and Eve go through. God declares some judgments to Adam and Eve and the serpent. He says to Adam, okay, one of the things you're going to have to live with from now on is that you're now going to do labor and sometimes you're not going to get paid. You're now going to go and you're going to plant gardens and weeds are going to come up. You're going to work hard, but you're not going to get as much as you should. You're going to work harder than you should. There's going to be frustrating labor. It's one of the reasons why we go work hard an account and we lose the account. We have the perfect business plan. We apply it, but yet it doesn't work out well. We do things and the stuff just doesn't come forward. And he says to Eve, and you can believe whether or not this is physically and literally why it happened, or you can choose to see some other meaning in the midst of this. This is just what it says in the book of Genesis. And he goes to Eve and says, Eve, you know, from now on, when you have kids, you are going to be in pain. Childbirth is going to be a painful thing for you. You are going to be reminded of the pain that you brought to me. I birthed you. You're going to be reminded of the pain that brought me and the pain that you brought amongst yourself on yourself by choosing a different path. And he looks at the serpent. He says, you know what? Taking away your legs, you're going to crawl around the ground and there's going to be this enmity between you and woman, between you and her seed. But one day, there's going to come a person who comes who's going to crush your head. He's going to crush your head. This is a prophecy, a foretelling of Jesus. The Bible says that Jesus comes up from on high, up from the highest on high, having always existed as God, takes on flesh and is tempted in every single way that you and I are, and yet he never follows through on any of that sin. And he goes to the point where he actually goes to a cross, also in the Bible referred to as a tree, referred to as a tree, and he takes, as a humble person only could, he takes the pain that other people deserve. In the midst of that, he breaks the curse. He crushes the head of Satan. He crushes his source power to where that source, that power that infiltrates our life, doesn't have to have power any longer. And there's passage after passage that describes this. Here's my favorite in the book of Philippians chapter 2, and it says this. It says, he humbled, I'm talking of Jesus, he humbled himself. He was up high, always existed. He humbled himself, comes down to earth, and he became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Not just death in an old folks' home, death on a cross, the worst kind of death that's ever happened, the most humiliating kind of death that's ever happened. You would go to the cross naked, not with a little loincloth like they have in the movies, no, naked, stretched out naked on a cross, people spitting at him, hurling abuses at him, scourging him, nails through him, death on the cross, the worst, most humiliating way of execution men and women have ever thought of. That's actually where we get the word excruciating from, crucifix. That's how humiliated he was, how humble he was, death on the cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place. God lifted him up. God took him and exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that's above every name to this day. You can be in a room and just say, hey, watch this. Jesus! Like, stop. Is that person swear? Is that person getting religious? Is that person getting spirit? I mean, go in a room, try someday, just try Ted. Betty. Gandhi. No, say Jesus. People go, it's an uncomfortable word, but it's a word that nearly every single person, or at least every tribe in the entire planet knows. They do. You go all over the planet, you won't find anybody who's heard of Buddha. You'll go all over the planet, you'll find anybody who's heard of Gandhi. You go to African tribes, you'll be very, very hard-pressed today to find any corner of the globe that hasn't heard of Jesus. Exalted him. And at his name, every knee should bow. Eventually, either on their own accord or by force, will be humbled and will come underneath him in heaven and on earth. And every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Deep, 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 deep stuff. When I first started walk with Christ, people would kind of take jabs at me and try to beat me down. And one of the things that I was accused of is, well, you know, religion or Christianity, Jesus, that's just your crutch. That's just your crutch. Well, I hated that one. Because, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm a virile guy. No, I don't need no crutch. No, he's not. No, he's not. Oh, yeah, he is. He's a crutch. You're weak. No, he's not. No. Yeah, that's like the best comeback I could have. No, he's not. Didn't work. See, I didn't want to be thought of, even when I came in relationship with Jesus, like I needed a crutch. No. I don't need a crutch. I'm strong. I just made a very smart decision because I happen to have heard this and understood this, and you haven't. You're dumb. I actually have heard this and understood this. No, I don't need a crutch. I just accepted something that it's true. I don't need a crutch. And I said, no, it's crutch. They'd say it's a crutch. And then as time went on and I read the Bible more and I reflected on this more, I realized really what my response should have been and is today is, Jesus is a crutch? No, he's not my crutch. He's actually my stretcher. He's my stretcher. See, when I refer to Jesus as my crutch, what I'm really saying is, hey, I'm really going around in my own power. I just got a little limp. I need something to lean on every once in a while. I'm really getting there okay. I'm getting to where I need to go. I just need that final 10% Jesus. I just need Jesus as my co-pilot. I just need someone there beside me and just kind of just go, what would Jesus do? I don't know. I just think through what he would do, and then I do it on my own because I don't really need his power. I just reduplicate what he did for me. So he's just my crutch. But the more you read the Bible, the more I get to know myself, I go, man, that indicates that I'm somehow walking somewhere and I've got some inherent goodness. No, man, I am dead. When it comes to pleasing God as a result of my rebelliousness, I am dead. That's actually what the scripture says. It says I am dead in my sins. Whether or not I want to realize it or not, I am flat on my back on the ground. And I probably should do it right now, but my pride won't let me do that. I'm actually like this. When it comes to pleasing God, I'm not moving anywhere. I might be doing all kinds of stuff in the financial realm, building things, being a funny guy. But when it comes to impressing God, I am dead. I am not impressing Him. I'm not lifting myself up. I think I'm lifting myself up, but to God, I'm immobile. And so what Jesus does, he comes along and he's a stretcher. He actually takes you to places you couldn't go. And God actually lifts you up. Humble yourself in the sight of God. And what happens? You won't stay humiliated forever, but he will lift you up. A few weeks ago, we had a baptism service. And I love the whole baptism thing. It's awesome. I've got an infant baptism and dedication. It's happening at the end of the last service today. Those are cool too, but they're a totally different thing. When a little baby is doing something and parents are making a statement, it's a cool thing, but it's different than when somebody is sitting in here or some other place and there's a massive pool up here and they decide on the spot to go up and be baptized. And what happens when you get baptized, it's all of these things coming together in a physical representation. It's you going down under the water, being placed in the grave, representing, I am spiritually dead. I'm not moving. I'm 6 feet under to God. And that's actually what happened with Jesus. He was killed, crucified, placed in the grave. And just as Jesus came back from the dead, raised up out of the water, in the same way, I come to new life and God actually picks me up. And you got to be an incredibly humble person to go through that act in front of thousands of people. We're going to do a little replay of this, what happened a few weeks ago. And I want you to just watch what happens in people's lives as we see this. The depth of the stories in that video never ceased to astound me. You know, when someone gets lifted up by God, when someone humbles themselves and comes to Him, all different genders, all different sizes, all different colors, all different ages. We saw people their age 7 to, I think, 85, the one guy was. All people taking a humble posture, being lifted up. My favorite ones in there was a couple who lived across the facility we used to rent in the early days of Crossroads. And we were just jerks, man. We would, like, park in front of their house, throw trash in their thing, park in their, like, driveway, actually. And he's Jewish. She wasn't. Both of them, you know, antagonistic. And a few years ago, they start coming around here. And actually, we saw him get baptized right on that that pool. Maybe my favorite of all was the guy that you might not have noticed. He was shaking when he was lifted, literally lifted into the pool because he's paralyzed. Came that day and ended up giving his life to Christ. And he had to be physically lifted up into the pool. He physically did what all of us spiritually have to do if we want to connect with God. He physically is in a wheelchair, physically in a stretcher. Lifted him up in that water, and he said, you know, when I go down underneath, I'm not going to be able to get myself up. He had to pre-tell him ahead of time, when you put me down, you're going to have to pull me up. I can't come up myself. And these guys had pulled him up, lifted him back up out. That's a representation of what God wants us to do, the posture of humility. If we say, I'm going down, God, I need you to lift me up. The song that Robbie just did, and we're going to do again, they did at this camp that I was at last week. Never heard of it before. Came home, found it, put it on my iPod, been listening to it on endless loop for the last week. And I want to give you the opportunity to sing this. And if you don't want to sing it because that's really not what you believe, that's cool, but I still want to invite you to stand and learn from these words. Why don't we stand right now? And for those of us who want to be humble, let's sing the truth in these words to God.